Okay, let's unpack this. When you think about the vast, intricate flow of goods that underpins our entire global economy, what typically comes to mind?
Yeah, usually it's the big stuff, right?
Exactly. Perhaps the colossal container ships crossing oceans, or maybe those seemingly endless lines of long-haul trucks crammed with everything from raw materials to finished products, making their way across continents.
We tend to focus on the extremes.
We do. But today, we're going to shine a spotlight on a truly fascinating and surprisingly complex corner of logistics that often flies under the radar. Less than truckload, or LTL, trucking.
Ah, LTL, the middle child of freight.
Kind of. It's essentially the Goldilocks zone of freight, perfectly designed for shipments that are just right, not too big for a single truck, but far too substantial for a typical package delivery service.
Makes sense.
Our mission today is to take a deep dive into the detailed industry analysis you've provided, extracting the most important insights from the unique market structure and the powerful growth drivers to the intricate operational challenges, and, crucially, what makes some companies not just survive, but truly thrive in this space.
And what's truly compelling here is how this specific segment, LTL, offers a masterclass in market dynamics and strategic advantage. It's often misunderstood or overlooked in favor of its larger or smaller counterparts, you know?
Right. People think trucks are parcels, not much in between.
Exactly. But as our sources vividly illustrate, it's underpinned by an almost oligopolistic market structure, guarded by significant, often underestimated barriers to entry.
Oligopolistic. Okay. So concentrated power.
Very much so. And this isn't merely about moving products from point A to point B. It's about a highly sophisticated, interconnected network that fundamentally impacts everything from the efficiency of e-commerce deliveries to the evolving architecture of global manufacturing supply chains.
Whoa, okay. So it touches a lot.
It really does. We're going to spend our time connecting the dots between those broad macroeconomic trends and the very specific razor-sharp operational excellence that ultimately drives profitability and creates lasting value in this sector.
Excellent.
By the end of this deep dive, you'll gain a profound understanding of why LTL is so much more than just trucks on a highway. It is, in fact, a critical, high-value, and often overlooked component of the modern logistics infrastructure.
That's a powerful framing. So let's begin by clearly defining this Goldilocks zone of freight, especially for anyone who might not yet appreciate its unique position.
Good idea. Get the basics down first.
As you said, LTL stands for less than truckload. It's specifically engineered for shipments that generally fall within a certain weight range, typically from about 150 pounds, stretching all the way up to 15,000 pounds.
That's a pretty wide range, actually.
It is. And to truly grasp its distinctiveness, it's helpful to contrast it with the other common categories of freight.
Right, the parcel and the full truckload.
Exactly. On one end of the spectrum, you have small parcel shipments. These are your everyday packages, generally weighing under 150 pounds. Handled by giants like UPS or FedEx Express.
The ones showing up at your door daily?
Pretty much. What's critical to understand about parcel is the sheer number of handling touch points involved an average of 17 times a package might be loaded, unloaded, and sorted before reaching its destination.
17 times. Wow, that's a lot of potential for mishaps.
As you can imagine, yeah. Each touch point introduces an opportunity for error or damage, making it a high volume but also high risk operation for delicate goods.
Okay, so that's parcel, then the other end.
Then at the other extreme, you have full truckload or FTL shipments. These are the big ones, often exceeding 20,000 pounds, where an entire 53-foot trailer is dedicated to a single shipper's load, traveling directly from origin to destination.
Point to point, much simpler logistically speaking.
Right. Carriers like Knight-Swift specialize in this point-to-point service, which means minimal handling, perhaps just loading and unloading once. It's incredibly efficient for bulk transport, but not practical for smaller consignments.
Because you'd be paying for a whole truck you don't need.
Precisely. And that's exactly where LTL carves out its unique and vital niche. If you're not shipping a tiny package, but you also don't have enough product to fill an entire trailer, say, you're moving a few pallets of medical supplies, a single oversized refrigerator, or a dozen custom-built doors for a construction project.
LTL is your answer.
It's the sweet spot. What fundamentally differentiates LTL and makes it incredibly complex yet remarkably efficient is its reliance on a sophisticated hub-and-spoke network.
Ah, the hub-and-spoke. Key concept.
Absolutely. This isn't just point-to-point. It's a constant dance of consolidation and deconsolidation. Freight from multiple shippers is picked up, brought to a local terminal, sorted, then combined onto larger line haul trailers for transport to a central hub.
Where it gets sorted again.
It's exactly resorted and finally sent out to its destination terminal for last mile delivery. It's a logistical ballet designed to optimize space and minimize cost for those mid-sized shipments.
And this middle ground is anything but a niche market. It's an absolutely massive and continually expanding sector.
Really? How big are we talking?
The North American LTL market alone is estimated to reach approximately $84.6 billion in 2024.
$84 billion. Wow.
But it's not just its current size that's compelling. It's its consistent growth trajectory. Forecasts project this market to exceed $120 billion by 2030.
Okay.
Which implies a very stable compound annual growth rate, or CDR, of about 4% to 6% over the next several years.
So growing faster than the general economy often.
Often, yes. And it's worth noting that the U.S. constitutes the lion's share of this market, generating a substantial $52.3 billion in revenue in 2023.
Okay, mostly U.S.-centric then.
Primarily, yeah. So the core nugget here is that LTL isn't a speculative or cyclical flash-in-the-pan industry.
It's foundational.
Exactly. Its consistent growth, which has often outpaced overall GDP expansion, provides an incredibly stable and predictable foundation for revenue expansion. This inherent stability is a crucial characteristic for investors and fundamentally underscores the indispensable role LTL plays in powering our modern economy.
Right.
For you, considering how goods traverse the entire supply chain, from the raw material supplier to the manufacturer, from the distribution center to the retail store, and even directly to your doorstep for a larger item.
Like that couch I just ordered.
Perfect example. Understanding this vital middle ground is absolutely essential for a complete and nuanced picture of how commerce actually functions. It's the connective tissue of our supply chain, ensuring that even items that don't fill a whole truck can still move efficiently and economically.
That's a great point about it being a stable GDP plus growth industry.
Right.
So what exactly are the powerful forces, the tailwinds, driving this steady and rather predictable expansion?
Good question. There are a couple of really big ones.
The first major secular growth driver, one that touches all of our lives, is the relentless and pervasive expansion of e-commerce. It's not just a trend anymore. It's a fundamental reshaping of how goods move.
Absolutely. Changed everything.
U.S. e-commerce sales reached a staggering $1.09 trillion in 2023, representing 15.6% of total retail sales. And that percentage is only growing.
And that directly impacts LTL, doesn't it?
Profoundly. This isn't simply an increase in shipment volume. It's a profound shift in the very characteristics of the supply chain itself. Traditionally, you'd see large full truckload shipments going to a few enormous central distribution centers.
Right, the old model.
But e-commerce demands something different. Smaller, more frequent, and increasingly diverse LTL shipments. These go to a much more dispersed and intricate network of fulfillment centers, local sorting hubs.
Closer to the end customer.
Exactly. And even directly to retail stores for buy online, pick up in-store options, which become incredibly popular. This decentralization means more short-haul LTL movements. And it's no small part of the market. The wholesale and retail trade segment now comprises roughly 35% of the entire U.S. LTL market.
35%! That's huge!
It really is. And here's where it gets particularly insightful.
Okay.
E-commerce freight is often far less uniform than traditional business-to-business shipments. Imagine the challenges of shipping that irregularly shaped, oversized sectional sofa you just ordered online, or a new exercise bike, or a major appliance.
Yeah, not stuff that fits neatly on a pallet.
Not at all. Its inherent complexity in terms of handling, loading, and stowing efficiently places an enormous premium on carriers who have truly invested in advanced technology.
Ah, technology is key here.
Absolutely critical. We're talking about things like automated dimensioning systems that can instantly and accurately measure the exact dimensions and weight of a shipment as it moves along a conveyor belt.
Dimensioners, yeah, those are game changers.
Or intelligent load building software that can figure out the optimal way to stack and pack these disparate items onto a trailer to maximize cubic utilization.
Getting the most out of every trailer load.
Right. The key insight here is that the rise of e-commerce isn't just creating more LTL volume. It's driving a technological arms race, widening the competitive gap between the tech-savvy, sophisticated carriers and those that are less equipped.
So it reinforces the leaders, the ones who invest.
Precisely. It profoundly reinforces the value of having a high-quality, technologically advanced network.
Building on that, the second equally profound driver shaping the LTL landscape is a significant reshaping of global trade patterns, specifically through what we call cross-border trade and the accelerating trend of nearshoring.
Nearshoring. bringing manufacturing closer.
Exactly. For the first time ever, in 2023, Mexico surpassed China to become the largest exporter of goods to the U.S., with exports totaling an astonishing $475.6 billion.
Wow, Mexico over China. Oh. That's a major shift.
It is. And this isn't just a fleeting statistical anomaly. It's a clear manifestation of a broader strategic shift. Companies are actively moving their manufacturing and supply chains closer to home, establishing operations in Mexico or Canada, not just for cost savings, but primarily to enhance supply chain resilience.
Yeah, after the pandemic disruptions.
Right. To drastically reduce transit times and, crucially, mitigate geopolitical risks, especially those associated with trans-Pacific trade disruption.
Makes sense. Less risk, faster delivery.
And data from the Bureau of Transportation Statistics, or BTS, really quantifies this shift. From 2019 to 2023, the number of commercial trucks entering the U.S. from Mexico increased by a notable 14.2%.
14% increase from Mexico.
Okay.
In stark contrast, trucks from Canada actually saw a decrease of 2.7%.
Interesting. So definitely a southward shift.
Very much so. This shift is incredibly significant for the LTL industry. It generates a more predictable, consistent, and repeatable flow of freight compared to the often volatile Asian imports, which are subject to fluctuating ocean shipping rates, notorious port congestion, and various international tensions.
More stable demand, then.
Exactly. What this means for LTL carriers with strong cross-border capabilities and dense terminal networks along the U.S.-Mexico border is a more stable baseline of industrial LTL demand that is far less susceptible to those large-scale global maritime disruptions.
Of a competitive advantage for those with a good Mexico network.
A definite advantage. This provides a foundational, less volatile revenue stream. For you, the listener, this means understanding how major geopolitical shifts and the pursuit of supply chain resilience are directly translating into tangible changes in the types and volumes of commercial trucks you encounter on the highway.
You see it playing out right there on the I-35.
You literally do. It's a direct consequence of macro-level strategic decisions impacting ground-level logistics.
It's fascinating how macro trends translate so directly into the movement of trucks. Now, despite these powerful long-term tailwinds, it's also absolutely crucial to understand that the LTL industry, like most sectors tied to physical goods, is inherently cyclical.
Right. It moves with the economy. Can't escape that.
Its fortunes are closely tied to the broader economic ebb and flow, particularly within the industrial and manufacturing sectors. Freight demand is what we term derived demand. Goods are only moved when they are produced, bought, and consumed.
Nobody ships things just for fun.
Exactly. This means LTL freight volumes exhibit a strong correlation with key macroeconomic indicators such as gross domestic product, GDP, the ISM Purchasing Managers Index, PMI, and overall industrial production.
So when manufacturing is up, LTL is generally up.
Pretty much a direct link. This makes perfect sense when you consider that U.S. domestic manufacturing alone accounts for an estimated 60% of all for-hire truck tonnage.
60%. That's the core of it, then.
It really is. So the health of manufacturing is an incredibly critical variable for LTL carriers. For instance, a PMI reading above 50, which indicates expansion in the manufacturing sector, typically translates almost immediately to higher freight volumes.
That PMI number is one to watch.
Definitely. It's worth noting that the PMI moved to 50.3 in February 2025 after a prolonged and challenging period of 26 consecutive months below 50.
Finally broke through.
Finally. Signaling a potential positive inflection point for industrial freight demand. This is a very big deal for carriers, suggesting an end to the freight recession many have been experiencing.
Some light at the end of the tunnel, perhaps.
Hopefully. The trucking market generally moves in relatively predictable cycles, usually lasting anywhere from 2 to 3 years. You often see an inflationary phase where demand outstrips available supply, leading to rising rates and increased carrier investment.
Carriers make hay while the sun shines.
Then comes the deflationary phase, where new capacity overshoots demand, rates decline, and less profitable carriers may even struggle or exit the market.
Like we saw with Yellow.
Exactly. Finally, an equilibrium phase emerges, where supply and demand rebalance, setting the stage for the next cycle. Recent data strongly suggests we're emerging from a prolonged freight recession that truly began in 2022.
Been a tough couple years.
With key metrics finally beginning to show those signs of recovery we've been waiting for. To help track this, the BTS's Transportation Services Index, or TSI, is a crucial leading economic indicator, often signaling changes in the broader economy before they become widely apparent.
TSI. Okay, another one for the dashboard.
And the Cass Freight Index also provides a real-time snapshot, with LTL movements accounting for about 25% of its total shipments, making it a very useful barometer.
Good indicators to keep an eye on then.
Definitely helps understand the current environment.
This cyclicality provides essential context, but what genuinely distinguishes LTL and, more importantly, creates its formidable competitive moat is its core operating model.
The hub and spoke system again.
Exactly. The LTL operating model is fundamentally a sophisticated hub-and-spoke system, a stark contrast to the simpler, direct, point-to-point FTL model. Let's walk through a typical journey to truly understand this logistical ballet.
Okay, let's follow a shipment.
It begins with local pickup and delivery, or P&D, drivers. They collect freight from multiple different shippers located within a specific geographic area.
So one truck picks up from maybe 5 or 10 places.
Could be, yeah. Once collected, that freight isn't immediately whisked to its final destination. Instead, it's brought back to a local service center, often referred to as an origin terminal or a spoke in the network.
Back to base first.
Right. At this spoke, the freight is carefully unloaded, meticulously sorted by its ultimate destination, and then consolidated with other shipments that are heading in the same general direction.
Grouping things going the same way.
Think of it like organizing a giant jigsaw puzzle, ensuring every piece fits efficiently. Once consolidated, this freight is loaded onto a long-haul trailer known as a line haul or relay trailer and transported to a much larger central sorting facility.
The hub.
This is the heart of the network. The hub, or often called a break bulk center. At the hub, trailers from numerous spokes arrive and the freight is unloaded, resorted sometimes multiple times, requiring incredible precision and speed.
Sounds chaotic.
Controlled chaos, hopefully. And then reloaded onto outbound trailers destined for other hubs or specific destination terminals closer to the final customer.
So it might go through multiple hubs.
It could, depending on the distance. Finally, the freight arrives at its destination terminal. Here it's unloaded again, sorted one last time for local delivery, and then a local P&D driver takes the individual shipments to their final respective destinations.
It's a lot more complex than just A to B.
Way more complex. What's truly fascinating here is that this intricate multi-stage network isn't just an operational choice. It is the industry's primary barrier to entry and the very source of its remarkable efficiency for handling smaller, highly varied shipments.
The network is the advantage.
It is the advantage. Profitability in this model hinges on three critical elements. First, maximizing trailer capacity, which the industry calls cubing out a trailer.
Using every inch of space.
Right. Ensuring that every available cubic foot is utilized, a complex optimization problem given varied freight sizes. Second, minimizing handling every time a pallet or package is touched. It increases labor costs, slows down transit, and critically elevates the risk of damage.
Fewer touches, better results.
Generally, yes. And third, relentlessly optimizing those P&D routes, making sure drivers cover the shortest possible distances and spend the least amount of time on the road, thereby reducing mileage and labor costs.
Efficiency is everything.
It really is. Technology, as you can well imagine, is not just helpful, but absolutely indispensable in orchestrating this complex dance.
We touched on dimensioners and load software.
Exactly. Over half of all U.S. logistics businesses now rely on route optimization software to make these P&D routes as efficient as possible. Beyond that, advanced transportation management systems, or TMS, and highly connected dock management systems leverage real-time data for sophisticated load planning, precise tracking of every shipment, and crucially, preventing costly misdirected freight.
So tech ties it all together.
It has to. Imagine sensors on every dock door instantly communicating with a central system to guide where freight needs to go and when. This model might seem abstract, but it's the invisible hand behind how that bulky online furniture purchase or critical medical equipment can get to you efficiently and reliably.
Right.
You're now getting a truly behind-the-scenes look at the logistical ballet that makes our on-demand world possible.
That truly is an incredible ballet to visualize, and it's also a highly protected one, which is why the LTL industry is frequently described as a rational oligopoly.
Rational oligopoly. Fewer players behaving predictably.
Right. This isn't a fragmented, cutthroat market. It's highly concentrated. Consider this. In 2023, the top 25 U.S. LTL carriers generated over 90% of the total market revenue. That's a staggering $47.7 billion out of $52.3 billion.
90% held by just 25 companies. That's incredibly concentrated.
It is. This level of concentration fundamentally fosters a very rational pricing environment, which stands in stark contrast to the often brutal and volatile full truckload market,
where thousands of small carriers drive prices down.
Exactly. Unlike FTL, where thousands of small carriers often compete on price alone, major LTL players consistently implement general rate increases, or GRIs, and have a proven ability to maintain strong yields even during periods of softer demand.
Pricing power, that's attractive.
That pricing discipline is a cornerstone of this industry's attractive and consistent profitability. A pivotal moment that dramatically solidified this market structure was the August 2023 bankruptcy of Yellow Corporation.
Ah, yes, the Yellow situation. Huge disruption.
Yellow was once a top five carrier, and its sudden exit was truly a once-in-a-generation event in the trucking industry. This removed a significant amount of capacity from the market.
Took a big chunk out.
But perhaps even more critically, it eliminated a competitor that was notoriously known for its historically aggressive discounting. This created an immediate vacuum.
And the others jumped in.
The remaining carriers, particularly XPO, Estes Express Lines, and Saia, were the primary beneficiaries. They strategically acquired many of Yellow's strategically located terminal properties at auction.
Snapped them up cheap, relatively speaking.
Right. This wasn't just about gaining assets. It allowed them to rapidly enhance their competitive advantage, their existing terminal network, at a fraction of the cost, and more importantly, the time it would have taken to build entirely new facilities from scratch.
Accelerating their own network density.
Precisely. This is why we often say the network is the moat. Building a truly competitive LTL network is immensely capital intensive.
You can't just decide to start an LTL company tomorrow.
Not easily. We're talking about...
And tying into those fundamental costs, labor dynamics are, without a doubt, a critical factor in LTL profitability.
Labor. The biggest expense, usually.
By far. Labor is the single largest cost component for LTL carriers, typically accounting for 50% or more of operating expenses.
Wow. Half the cost is people.
Yeah. The industry faces a chronic driver shortage, a challenge amplified by an aging workforce, persistently high turnover rates, and the inherently challenging lifestyle associated with long hours and demanding schedules.
The driver shortage seems like a permanent feature now.
It feels that way sometimes. While LTL driving jobs are often considered more attractive than long-haul FTL roles, because drivers can often return home more frequently.
Better quality of life, maybe.
Potentially, yes. Yeah. But the shortage remains a significant constraint on network capacity and directly pushes up wages and benefits across the board. Carriers are increasingly investing in sophisticated recruitment and retention programs, offering sign-on bonuses, higher pay packages, and even improved benefits to attract and keep qualified drivers.
Costs keep going up.
They do. Unionization also plays a significant role in LTL labor dynamics. While unionization rates have declined across the broader trucking industry since deregulation in the 1980s, unions like the Teamsters remain a major force for certain carriers, most notably ArcBest's ABF Freight.
ABF is the main unionized one people talk about.
It is. A unionized workforce entails a fundamentally different operating model and cost structure compared to their non-union peers. This typically translates to a structurally higher cost base for wages and benefits, and often more rigid work rules regarding scheduling, routes, and even how freight is handled.
Less flexibility, maybe.
Generally, yes. Mm-hmm. These differences are consistently reflected in the financial performance of unionized versus non-union carriers.
Okay, so that's labor. What about pricing? You mentioned it's rational, but how does it actually work?
Right. This raises an important question. How exactly is LTL pricing determined, and is it poised for a major shift? Historically, LTL pricing has been notoriously complex, based on the NMFTA freight classification system. This system categorizes goods into 18 different classes based on four primary characteristics: density, weight per cubic foot, stowability, how easily it can be loaded with other freight, handling, difficulty of handling, and liability, risk of damage or theft.
Sounds complicated already.
It is. But here's the aha moment, and it's a huge one for the industry. A major catalyst is the NMFTA's planned overhaul of this system, which is set to take effect in July 2025.
An overhaul. What's changing?
This change will transition the industry to a much more standardized density-based rating framework.
Density-based. So how much space it takes up becomes paramount.
Exactly. This is a significant and arguably underappreciated tailwind for carrier profitability. The current classification system contains ambiguities that savvy shippers can sometimes exploit by misclassifying freight to secure lower rates.
Skimming the system a bit.
Sometimes, yeah. even if their shipment takes up more space than its weight might suggest. The move to a more objective, density-based system will remove much of this ambiguity, allowing carriers to more accurately and appropriately charge for the space a shipment consumes, not just its weight.
That seems fairer, especially for bulky stuff.
It is. This is particularly beneficial for handling the growing volume of light, bulky e-commerce freight. We discussed earlier items like furniture or fitness equipment that are difficult to fit efficiently.
Those dimensioners become even more valuable then.
Absolutely critical. Carriers with the most advanced technology, such as automated dimensioning scanners that can instantly and accurately capture a shipment's precise dimensions and weight as it moves down a conveyor, will be best positioned to capitalize on this,
giving them better yield,
leading to a structural improvement in yields across the industry. Think about how much more revenue they can capture by accurately pricing every cubic foot. Additionally, carriers are increasingly adopting dynamic pricing models, leveraging AI and machine learning for real-time rate adjustments based on current network capacity, demand fluctuations, and even weather conditions.
Wow, getting really sophisticated. Very much so.
For you, the listener, this isn't just about the arcane details of trucking. It's about how technology and even subtle regulatory shifts are fundamentally transforming the economics of an entire industry, and how that could eventually impact the cost and speed of goods you receive.
That structural shift in pricing, moving towards density-based rates, genuinely feels like a game changer. Now, with all this context, understanding the industry's landscape, its growth drivers, the cyclical nature, and its operational intricacies, let's turn our attention to the actual players in the LTL space.
Right, who are the main competitors?
Our analysis of the market clearly highlights what we call a barbell valuation structure. What this implies is that the market tends to award a significant valuation premium to the undisputed, best-in-class, proven operators.
The premium players get premium multiples.
Exactly. At the same time, it applies more cautious, often show-me valuation to companies that might be in the midst of challenging operational turnarounds or are pursuing very aggressive growth phases that require substantial capital.
Growth versus proven profitability.
Precisely. We're going to walk through the key public carriers and see precisely how they fit into this dynamic.
Okay, let's dive into the companies, starting with Old Dominion Freight Line, or ODFL.
ODFL, they always seem to come up first, the gold standard.
They are unequivocally the premium operator and the quality leader in the LTL industry. Their strategy is crystal clear. Provides superior, consistent service, which enables them to command premium pricing.
Service sells.
It really does here. Mm-hmm. We're talking about an on-time delivery rate exceeding 99% mm-hmm. and a cargo claims ratio of an astonishingly low 0.1%.
0.1% claims. That's incredibly low.
It is. This level of reliability isn't just a marketing slogan. It's a powerful, tangible differentiator in an industry where damaged or delayed freight costs shippers time and money.
Peace of mind for the shipper.
Definitely. ODFL operates a single, integrated, non-union network comprising 261 service centers across 48 states, which gives them unparalleled operational control and seamless service. Their philosophy is to prioritize service quality and pricing discipline, even if it means strategically sacrificing a bit of short-term volume.
Price over volume sometimes.
And this disciplined approach has been incredibly successful. Financially, this operational excellence translates directly into superior results. ODFL consistently generates the industry's lowest operating ratio, or R, remember, that's operating expenses divided by revenue, so lower is better.
Lowest OR means highest efficiency.
Exactly. Their OR frequently sits in the low to mid 70s, a level their competitors have yet to achieve. This unparalleled efficiency drives best-in-class operating margins, exceptional return on invested capital, or ROIC, and robust free cash flow generation.
The numbers speak for themselves.
They do. In 2023, they generated a solid $5.8 billion in revenue. Even through the recent freight recession, they've managed to maintain market share while diligently increasing yields. In terms of capital allocation, they are disciplined, focusing on organic network expansion to fill density gaps, continuous technology investment, and consistently returning capital to shareholders through both dividends and share repurchases.
A well-oiled machine.
Very much so. Their high ROIC means they effectively turn every dollar of investment into profit.
Okay, so that's ODFL. Who's next?
XPO. Next, let's look at XPO Inc. Following a series of strategic spin-offs that separated its logistics and brokerage businesses, XPO is now a pure-play LTL carrier.
Right, they slimmed down.
And stands as one of the top four players in North America, with approximately $4.7 billion in revenue in 2023. They were a primary beneficiary of the Yellow Corporation terminal auctions, strategically acquiring 28 service centers.
They picked up quite a few.
They did. These acquisitions weren't just about adding doors. They were crucial for expanding XPO's network and significantly improving route density in key markets.
Hmm.
The core of XPO's strategy is its ambitious LTL 2.0 plan.
LTL 2.0. Okay. What's that involve?
It's a comprehensive, multi-year initiative focused on fundamentally improving service quality, driving network efficiency, and optimizing yield management. They've made impressive progress, notably reducing their reliance on costly third-party purchased transportation.
Using fewer outside trucks.
Exactly. Bringing it down from over 20% of their miles to under 7% recently. This particular shift has driven substantial improvement in their operating ratio, which reached 82.9% in Q2 2025.
82.9%. Still higher than ODFL, but improving.
Definitely improving. They've managed to deliver nearly 400 basis points of margin improvement even through the recent downturn, and management firmly believes there's a massive runway ahead for further gains as the LTL 2.0 plan continues to unfold.
So, a turnaround story in progress.
That's the narrative. Their capital allocation is strategically focused on paying down debt, executing disciplined share repurchases, and making targeted organic investments in their LTL network to fully support the LTL 2.0 vision.
Makes sense. Get the house in order, invest in the core. What about Saia?
Then we have Saia, Inc., a company that has pursued a truly aggressive growth strategy, meticulously transforming itself from a strong regional carrier into a formidable national competitor.
Saia has been expanding like crazy, haven't they?
They really have. Since 2017, Saia has opened an impressive 69 new terminals, systematically expanding its direct service footprint to all 48 contiguous U.S. states.
69 new terminals, that's huge investment.
Massive. Like XPO, Saia was a key acquirer of former Yellow terminals, using these strategically located properties to quickly fill existing geographic gaps and accelerate their national network build-out. Their stated aim is to offer superior service at a competitive price, leveraging their expanding reach.
Growing the network first.
Seems to be the focus. This rapid expansion has successfully driven above-market revenue growth, evidenced by a robust 10-year revenue CGR of 9.7%. Their 2023 revenue reached $2.88 billion.
Solid growth numbers.
But this aggressive rapid growth has naturally required substantial capital investment. They've deployed over $2 billion since 2021, with another $650 million planned for 2025 alone.
Spending a lot to grow.
A lot. This heavy investment has, as expected, led to an increase in their debt levels. The key question for investors and analysts watching Saia is whether the significant capital expenditure can ultimately translate into sustained margin improvement and genuine operating leverage as their network matures and density increases.
Can they make that investment pay off?
That's the billion-dollar question, literally. Their capital allocation is heavily weighted towards these growth investments. They currently do not pay a dividend, opting to reinvest all available capital back into the network.
All in on growth for now. Okay, who else? ArcBest.
ArcBest, specifically their ABF freight segment, represents another major player, but with a distinct operating model. ArcBest is a diversified logistics company.
They do more than just LTL.
Right, offering a range of services from managed transportation to warehousing. But ABF Freight is its longstanding national LTL carrier. Their key differentiator, and what sets them apart from most of their direct competitors, is their unionized workforce, predominantly represented by the Teamsters.
The union factor.
Exactly. This unionized structure creates a fundamentally different operating model and cost base compared to their non-union peers. It typically results in a structurally higher cost base for wages and benefits, and often more rigid work rules regarding scheduling, routes, and even how freight is handled within terminals.
Higher costs, maybe less flexibility.
That's the general perception. This is consistently reflected in their financial performance with a higher operating ratio, generally around 95% for the asset-based LTL segment. Their 2023 revenue was $2.8 billion.
95% OR. That's quite a bit higher than ODFL or XPO.
It is. Their financial performance is also heavily influenced by the outcomes of periodic labor contract negotiations with the Teamsters, which can introduce periods of uncertainty. The market generally applies a valuation discount to ArcBest relative to its high-performing non-union peers to account for the structural difference in profitability and operational flexibility.
So the market prices in that difference?
It seems to. ArcBest's capital allocation strategy carefully balances the significant capital needs of its LTL segment with growth opportunities in its more asset-light businesses while still returning capital to shareholders through dividends and share repurchases.
Balancing act there. Okay, one more major player. TFI.
Finally, we have TFI International with its U.S. LTL segment, TForce Freight. TFI is a large Canadian-based diversified transportation and logistics company.
Canadian company, but big in the U.S. LTL space.
Yes, they significantly expanded their presence in the U.S. LTL market through their notable 2021 acquisition of UPS Freight, which they subsequently rebranded as TForce Freight.
Right, about the old UPS LTL division.
Correct. TFI's strategy for TForce Freight has primarily centered on a comprehensive operational turnaround of that acquired UPS network. The aim is to shift towards a more asset-light model, emphasizing increased use of brokerage and intermodal to improve returns on capital employed.
Another turnaround situation.
Definitely. The U.S. LTL segment has undeniably been a work in progress, historically struggling with profitability. They reported a high operating ratio of 94.0% in Q2 2025.
94%. Also quite high.
It is. However, it's important to note that management has demonstrated an ability to drive sequential improvement, with the OR improving from 98.9% in Q1 2025, showing signs of progress in the turnaround.
So, moving in the right direction, albeit slowly.
That's the hope. The parent company's overall performance is diversified across its LTL, truckload, and logistics segments, providing some stability. TFI's capital allocation history shows them to be a disciplined acquirer of transportation assets. Their current focus for the LTL segment remains squarely on improving operational efficiency and financial returns, and they are committed to returning capital to shareholders through dividends and consistent share repurchases.
It's truly eye-opening to see how, even within what appears to be a single industry, these companies have such vastly different strategies and competitive positions. Let's delve into some comparative highlights, pulling out those key metrics to really underscore these differences.
Yeah, let's put some numbers side by side.
Looking at LTL revenue for 2023, Old Dominion clearly led with $5.8 billion. XPO followed at $4.7 billion. Then Saia and ArcBest were both in the $2.8, $2.9 billion range, with TFI's U.S. LTL segment at $2.4 billion.
Clear tiers there in terms of size.
Definitely. And in terms of year-over-year revenue growth, a tough market saw ODFL down 6.0%.
Showing that cyclicality.
Right. But Saia, with its aggressive growth strategy, was up 3.2%, while TFI's U.S. LTL was down a significant 19.7%.
Big divergence in growth profiles. Saia pushing hard, TFI still integrating or turning around.
Exactly. Now, the operating ratio.
This is where the operating ratio, or OR, truly tells the story and reveals the underlying efficiency. Remember, a lower OR means a company is spending less to generate each dollar of revenue, making it more profitable.
Lower is better.
Lower is better. Old Dominion's OR in Q2 2025 was a remarkable 74.6%.
Mid-70s. Incredible.
Just to give you context, that means for every dollar of revenue, only about 74.6 cents were spent on operations, leaving over 25 cents as operating profit. Compare that to XPO at 82.9%.
Still good, but a gap.
Saia at 87.8%, ArcBest's asset-based segment around 95%, and TFI's U.S. LTL segment at 94.0%.
Huge difference between ODFL and the others, especially ABF and TFI.
It is. That significant gap in OR directly translates to immense differences in operating margin. ODFL consistently operates at a 25.4% operating margin, while others are generally in the 5% to 17% range.
25% margin versus single digits or low teens. That's massive.
It fundamentally demonstrates ODFL's superior efficiency, pricing power, and ability to manage costs. And then there's return on invested capital, or ROIC.
How well they use their money.
Exactly. ODFL's consistently strong ROIC is a testament to their exceptional capital deployment and disciplined investment. For companies like Saia, which are currently investing heavily in network expansion, their future valuation will largely depend on whether that massive capital expenditure ultimately generates a high and sustainable ROIC.
I get a return on that spending.
Effectively showing a return on the capital they are putting to work. And to quickly get a snapshot of financial health, net debt to EBITDA. ODFL is nearly debt-free at 0.09x.
Practically no debt. Wow.
Highlighting immense financial flexibility, while XPO is at 2.5x, Saia at 0.4x, ArcBest at 1.47x, and TFI around 1.5x.
So varying levels of leverage too. ODFL stands out again. You can now clearly see that even within a single, seemingly homogenous industry like LTL trucking, different companies adopt vastly different strategies, leading to dramatically different performance metrics and, consequently, unique investment profiles.
Absolutely.
It's a reminder that beneath the surface, there's a world of operational nuance. So given all this fascinating data and the cyclical nature of the industry, what does this all mean for someone trying to truly understand the financial health or assess the investment potential of these companies.
That's the core question, isn't it? How do you value these things?
Valuing companies in a cyclical industry like LTL trucking requires a particularly nuanced approach. You can't simply look at single period results because freight volumes and earnings are inherently volatile, swinging significantly across economic cycles.
Yeah, looking at just one quarter or even one year can be really misleading.
Definitely.
If we connect this to the bigger picture of valuation, a comprehensive approach typically employs two primary methodologies, multiples-based analysis and discounted cash flow, or DCF analysis.
Multiples and DCF, standard tools.
Right. Multiples like price to earnings, PE, and enterprise value to EBITDA, are widely used for relative valuation, allowing you to compare a company to its peers. For the broader transportation industry, EBITDA often ranges from 5x to 9x.
Okay, 5 to 9x is sort of the baseline.
Generally. But as we've seen, premium LTL operators, due to their superior profitability and stability, can command much higher multiples. DCF analysis, on the other hand, is an intrinsic valuation method. It projects a company's future free cash flows to estimate its true intrinsic value.
What the company's actually worth based on future cash.
Exactly. It forces you to make explicit and detailed assumptions about long-term revenue growth, sustainable mid-cycle operating margins, and required capital expenditures.
More work, but maybe more insightful.
Potentially. However, the greatest challenge, and indeed a common pitfall, in valuing any cyclical company is avoiding what analysts call the valuation trap.
The valuation trap sounds dangerous.
It can be. Imagine a company at the absolute peak of a freight cycle with booming earnings. Using those peak earnings can make the stock appear deceptively cheap on a PE basis.
Looks cheap, but earnings are about to fall off a cliff.
Precisely. But once the cycle inevitably turns, those earnings will collapse, and what seemed cheap suddenly becomes prohibitively expensive. Conversely, using trough earnings during a downturn can make a stock look prohibitively expensive just before a sharp recovery.
So you buy high and sell low, or miss the boat entirely.
Exactly. To mitigate this, it is absolutely crucial that key metrics are normalized to reflect a sustainable mid-cycle level of profitability, stripping out the temporary distortions of boom and bust.
Normalize. Find the average or sustainable level through the cycle.
That's the idea. The most effective technique for this is through the cycle averaging. This involves analyzing key performance metrics like operating margins and return on invested capital, ROIC, over a full freight cycle, typically 5 to 7 years, to derive a realistic and sustainable earnings power.
Look at the long-term picture.
Right. This approach smooths out the peaks and troughs, giving you a much clearer picture of the company's true underlying profitability. Furthermore, in a DCF model, it's best practice to incorporate different scenarios, a recessionary case, a base case, and a strong recovery case to provide a range of potential intrinsic values.
Stress test your assumptions.
Exactly. This quantifies the cyclical impact and helps you understand the full spectrum of possibilities. Our peer comparison table clearly illustrates this normalization in action. Old Dominion, with its industry-leading performance and consistent through-the-cycle profitability, trades at a much higher EBITDA of 17.4x.
17 times EBITDA for ODFL.
Compared to XPO at 13.5x, Saia at 13.3x, ArcBest at 7.1x, and TFI at 8.5x.
Huge premium for ODFL. And ABF TFI at the lower end fitting that barbell structure you mentioned?
Precisely. This strong correlation between superior operational performance and a premium valuation is undeniable and consistently observed. In this capital-intensive industry, return on invested capital, or ROIC, is truly more powerful than just simple revenue growth.
And profitable growth is what matters.
Absolutely. Growth that is achieved through massive capital investment but generates a low return on that capital can actually destroy shareholder value over the long term. ODFL has historically generated exceptionally high ROIC, demonstrating their highly effective capital deployment. For a company like Saia, currently in a heavy investment phase, its future valuation will be highly dependent on whether those significant capital expenditures ultimately generate a high and sustainable ROIC.
It all comes back to that return on investment.
It really does. This analytical framework gives you the tools to think like a seasoned analyst, understanding that a company's true value isn't just about its current numbers, but its long-term sustainable performance through market fluctuations.
That's a truly crucial distinction, really getting past the surface level numbers to understand the deeper dynamics. So pulling it all together, it's clear the LTL industry presents a compelling investment case.
Seems that way, based on the structure.
It's built on a rational oligopoly, fortified by high barriers to entry, and boasts significant pricing power. Those secular tailwinds we've discussed at length, from the relentless expansion of e-commerce to the strategic pivot towards nearshoring, are only strengthening the networks of sophisticated carriers.
And don't forget Yellow.
Right. And crucially, Yellow Corporation's highly disruptive exit from the market has further solidified the competitive position of the remaining dominant players.
Took out a major competitor and discounter. Big deal. Looking ahead, there are clear bull and bear scenarios that could unfold for the LTL industry.
Okay, what's the upside case?
In a bull case, we would see the North American economy achieve a soft landing, or even better, experience a sustained industrial recovery. This would lead to a robust rebound in freight volumes across the board.
Volumes pick up strongly.
Right. The consolidated industry structure, particularly post-Yellow, would allow the remaining major carriers to leverage strong general rate increases, translating into significant margin expansion due to their high fixed costs.
Rising power kicks in.
Yeah. E-commerce and nearshoring would continue to provide a strong, growing baseline demand, further fueling the need for sophisticated LTL services. And importantly, carriers like XPO and Saia would successfully execute their ambitious strategies, narrowing the profitability gap with the best-in-class players and seeing their valuation multiples re-rate higher as confidence in their execution grows.
So the turnarounds work and get rewarded.
That's the bull case.
Okay, what about the bear case? What could go wrong?
On the flip side, the bear case presents a more challenging outlook. This would involve a deep and prolonged industrial recession, triggering a multi-year decline in freight tonnage.
Economy tanks, freight dries up.
Exactly. Despite the industry's pricing discipline, the high fixed costs associated with maintaining extensive terminal networks would lead to severe margin compression for all carriers.
Costs stay high, revenue falls.
Squeeze. Big squeeze. A sharp and sustained spike in fuel costs that cannot be fully or quickly passed through to shippers via fuel surcharges would erode profitability.
Fuel spikes hurting margins.
Additionally, new, stringent emission standards requiring costly fleet modernization could impose significant capital expenditures on carriers, straining their balance sheets.
Environmental regulations adding costs.
And finally, disruptive labor events at unionized carriers, such as extended strikes or significantly higher wage demands, could ripple through the entire supply chain, impacting even non-union competitors.
Labor strife causing disruptions. Lots of potential pitfalls.
There are always risks. To effectively monitor the health and direction of this industry, several key performance indicators or KPIs are critical to watch.
Okay, what should we be tracking?
First, volume or tonnage. You'll want to track year-over-year and sequential changes in LTL tonnage per day and shipments per day. These are direct measures of demand.
How much stuff is moving? Got it.
Second, pricing or yield. Closely monitor revenue per hundredweight, which is the revenue generated per 100 pounds of freight, especially excluding fuel surcharges. This core yield is crucial for gauging underlying pricing trends and whether carriers are maintaining their pricing power.
Are they getting paid more for the same trade, basically?
Essentially, yes. Third, profitability. The operating ratio, or OR, remains the single most important metric. Remember, lower is always better, indicating superior efficiency and cost control.
Keep an eye on that OR.
Always. And fourth, capacity. Track fleet age, the number of service centers, the number of dock doors, and management commentary on network capacity utilization. Are they adding terminals, buying new trucks? This tells you about supply.
Watching supply and demand balance through those KPIs.
Exactly. These KPIs, when viewed together, give you a real-time pulse on the industry's performance and future trajectory.
And beyond those immediate quantifiable indicators, it's absolutely vital to guide yourself through a comprehensive risk analysis for the LTL sector. There are several categories of risk.
Always important to consider the risks.
First, industry-specific risks. Economic cyclicality is, without a doubt, the foremost risk. As we discussed, LTL is directly sensitive to GDP and industrial production. During downturns, even the best carriers face significant headwinds.
The macro environment rules all, to some extent.
Fuel price volatility is another major concern. Diesel is a huge expense. And while fuel surcharges help, they often lag behind rapid price increases, creating a temporary margin squeeze.
That fuel lag can hurt.
The chronic driver shortage continually constrains capacity and drives up wage costs, impacting both operational efficiency and profitability. And then there are regulatory changes, whether new hours of service rules, more stringent emission standards requiring costly fleet upgrades, or even shifts in how independent contractors are classified.
More rules, more costs.
All of which could significantly increase operating costs and capital expenditures. Next, we have company-specific risks.
Risks unique to each carrier.
Right. For carriers like XPO, SIA, and TFI, there's always inherent execution risk.
Mm-hmm.
Will their significant operational turnaround strategies or ambitious network expansion plans actually deliver the expected improvements in efficiency and profitability?
Can they pull it off?
Labor relations, especially for unionized carriers like ArcBest's ABF Freight, are a recurring risk. Failed negotiations could lead to work stoppages, disruptive strikes, or substantially increased labor costs that are difficult to absorb.
The union contract cycle.
While generally diversified, customer concentration for any specific carrier means the unexpected loss of a very large customer could significantly impact volume and revenue. And in our increasingly digital world, cybersecurity is a growing threat.
Cyber attacks are a risk everywhere now.
Given the industry's heavy reliance on complex IT systems for routing, tracking, and billing, a major data breach or system disruption could cause widespread operational chaos and data loss, impacting service and reputation.
Shutting down the network would be disastrous.
Finally, we must consider the broader secular trends' impact. E-commerce demands, while a powerful growth driver, also presents significant operational challenges. The shift towards smaller, more frequent, and often irregularly shaped shipments, combined with ever-increasing customer expectations for faster and faster delivery,
makes the job harder.
Puts immense pressure on the efficiency and capacity of LTL networks. In the very long term, autonomous vehicles represent a potential massive disruption.
The self-driving truck question.
While widespread adoption is still likely more than a decade away for heavy-duty trucking, it could fundamentally alter the industry's cost structure by reducing labor needs and potentially change competitive dynamics.
Game changer eventually.
And finally, sustainability and electrification are pushing transportation companies to reduce their carbon footprint. The inevitable transition to electric or alternative fuel vehicles will require enormous capital expenditures for fleet replacement and, crucially, the build-out of extensive charging infrastructure.
Huge CapEx coming for electrification.
Which will be a monumental undertaking. You now have a comprehensive mental checklist, allowing you to critically assess not just the compelling opportunities, but also the significant and evolving headwinds facing this vital industry. This helps you move from being just informed to being truly analytical about the LTL space.
Good summary of the landscape and the challenges.
What an incredible deep dive. We've journeyed from understanding what less-than-truckload freight even is to meticulously dissecting its complex hub-and-spoke network, to seeing how sweeping global trends like e-commerce and nearshoring are fundamentally reshaping its future.
Covered a lot of ground.
We also explored the often unseen cyclical nature and the very real operational and financial challenges facing the companies that tirelessly move our goods. We've truly uncovered those key nuggets of insight. The oligopolistic structure that provides stability, the network itself acting as an unassailable competitive moat.
The network is the moat.
The profound and lasting impact of Yellow's bankruptcy, and that monumental industry-wide shift to density-based pricing that will transform profitability.
That pricing change is definitely one to watch. This deep dive truly highlights how seemingly mundane aspects of logistics can, in fact, be powerful engines of economic change and innovation. While the LTL industry is undeniably deeply tied to broader economic cycles, the relentless push for operational efficiency, fueled by technological advancements and the ever-increasing demands of e-commerce, strongly suggests that the competitive landscape within LTL will continue to consolidate.
Fewer, bigger players, potentially.
It seems likely. The question for you to mull over as you reflect on this information is this. In an increasingly digital, demanding, and on-demand world, will the ultimate differentiator for LTL carriers be pure scale and overwhelming network density? Or will it be the agility and technological prowess to adapt to ever-evolving customer expectations and rapidly emerging technological advancements?
Scale versus agility. Or maybe a combination of both. That's a fantastic question to ponder and one that will undoubtedly shape the future of this critical industry. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the LTL trucking industry.
My pleasure. Fascinating sector.
We genuinely hope you feel a little bit more informed and a lot more curious about the hidden complexities and the vital role that keeps our world moving. We'll be back soon with another deep dive into a topic you never knew you needed to know so much about. Until next time, stay curious.